Next Step number 706, December 16, 2021.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vazgen. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vazgen's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents on the tree.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on that. You can count on that. One of the beautiful songs we get to enjoy during the Christmas season. Yeah, I know. There's sometimes complaints that it's maybe a little bit too much. And perhaps it is. There's a few radio stations in town that begin playing them sometime late October, before Halloween, yeah. But usually it's mid-November, and I like to start listening to them right after Thanksgiving. And I'm not going to pretend. I love Christmas songs, Christmas carols, and I love to just fill up my life with these songs. So it's once a year. You do it, and I like it. I'm not going to pretend. But this particular song, I was just leaving the hospital yesterday visiting a patient there, and this came on the radio. This particular version, which I had to Shazam, is that what it's called? Yeah. I had to find out who was the singer, Bob Schneider. I just loved it. It was just such a mellow voice and so perfect. It was interspersed between news that the new COVID outbreak, the Omicron variant, was, they're predicting that it's going to be producing a winter like last year. And my head went to the winter last year and the losses that we sustained. And I kept hearing this sound, I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on that. You can count on that. It's going to be a lot of people who aren't home for Christmas this year. I mean, there's a tragic number of people who won't be home. It's a tragic number of people who will be celebrating Christmas without their loved ones. Just this past week here in the United States, we hit 800,000 deaths because of the coronavirus, COVID-19. And whatever people want to make of it, I know. You bring up the issue and you're in for a fight, you're in for a struggle, you're in for people calling you this or that name. I've never seen anything like this in my life. Me, who I was born in a time where there was still polio, there was still smallpox, and they gave us vaccines. I remember that vividly as a kid in elementary school. We'd line up and we'd take the Salk vaccine. Yeah, I remember the Salk vaccine. I remember those needles that they put in us for, what was it, measles, rubella, all these kind of diseases that you don't hear about anymore because they vaccinated people against them. But today you talk about vaccination and you're in for a struggle, you're in for a fight. And that's not what we're going to do today. Instead, I'm going to talk about I'll Be Home for Christmas and all the people who can't sing that for a variety of reasons. Not necessarily that they've passed on, but just can't be home for Christmas. Perhaps in a hospital room. Perhaps in another country. Perhaps a prisoner somewhere. Yeah. We don't really think about these people, do we? There's people who will not be home for Christmas. Definitely because they've passed on. But there's also people who just can't make it home for Christmas. And so the songs, the lyrics, I'll be home for Christmas, you can plan on that. Perhaps the planning has to take a different form, right? To cherish a memory, to remember some good things. And that's what I want to do with you today. To talk about some people, some very real people in my life. Some gone, some passed away, some that are with us still, but unable to make it to that dinner celebration of Christmas that is so traditional in many families, or just even to be able to sing a Christmas carol together. I told you I was on my way back from the hospital yesterday, and it was kind of a very eerie feeling too, because as I was in the hospital, I stumbled upon an elevator that I wanted to take. Needed to take. Actually, it wasn't on the main direction of the hospital. It was a huge, huge hospital. So I ended up in a weird area, and I found this elevator, and I was going to go, and just I looked over to the right side, and there was a huge sign that said, "Do not enter COVID ward." And it's very surrealistic. I don't know how many of you get a chance to be in hospitals visiting. I hope you're not in a hospital to be there, but to visit. When you're visiting in the hospital, it's a very, very eerie feeling because you realize everyone around you is there for not reasons, because you're the only one who's there because you willingly want to go and visit. You're the only one there. Everybody else is there because they don't want to be there. It's a rude awakening. Anyway, I was at the hospital and I was visiting one of my dear, dear mentors, I want to say, Dr. Dick Majan. And I want to share some stories about him because this weekend we're going to be honoring him, this coming weekend. At the Western Diocese, we're going to be celebrating St. Stephen's Day. Now, St. Stephen happens to be the first deacon of the Christian Church. You can read about him in the book of Acts, chapter 6. There you'll read where they select the first group of deacons who are there to assist the apostles. The apostles who were serving at the tables. And so carry that on to the year 2021. You have the holy table, you have the holy altar, and the priest, and the deacons are there to assist the priest in the administration of the Holy Eucharist, Holy Communion. And this Sunday, we're going to be celebrating that at St. Leon. It's a 1 week before the actual feast. Just for the purists, okay, for the purists. This year, St. Stephen's Day falls right on Christmas Day. And the reality that we face here in the West, especially here in the United States, is that you can't pull it off. You can't pull it off. And so it really takes people of faith to be able to say that, hey, you know what? It doesn't matter if it's not on December 25th. St. Stephen's, we're going to do a week before. You know, like, get with the program. It's not about the dates. It's about who you're commemorating, who you're remembering. So we have St. Stephen's. We're going to be remembering St. Stephen, the first deacon. And in so doing, it's going to be an opportunity to celebrate all the deacons. And in the Armenian church tradition, we have a beautiful, beautiful tradition where the deacons actually wear the crowns of the priests. And there's a whole tradition in this, just beautiful service. It's going to be online. You can check it out at the Western Diocese Facebook page, Sunday morning, 10:30 Pacific time if you want to watch it. It's going to be a little, I'm going to suggest, I know a lot of churches do it, I'm going to suggest the one at the St. Leon Remontians Cathedral, because it is going to encompass deacons from throughout the Western Diocese. In other words, we're going to have a lot of people there. And during this service, the Archbishop, the Primate, wants to single out one particular deacon who kind of represents all of the deacons in his dedication and service to the church. And he happens to be the deacon Harair Dekmejian. That's what I want to share with you, because he's going to be receiving this honor on Sunday. And I want to just talk a little bit about him from a personal, because I've had the good fortune of knowing him for the last 25 years, although I've known him longer, actually. Because we did Window back 30 years ago, and he was actually one of the first people that spoke for us. He spoke during the time of the invasion in Iraq. Just incredible opportunities for us to run into each other. But it was in 1996 when I came to the St. Gregory Armenian Church in Pasadena that I was fortunate enough to have this deacon, Harair Dekmejian, serve at the Holy Altar. And in his service, he was just meticulous as far as bringing the liturgy of the church alive. And even more, I had the opportunity, once we went from St. Gregory, from Pasadena, to Glendale, he came and he became the choir director. For 13 years, we had a chance to work together. And during the last several years, we've had the good opportunity to at least be in fellowship through our Bible studies. And our prayers are with him now as he's in the hospital recovering. And it might be a case where he won't be able to make it to church on Sunday, but we will be honoring him, and rightly so. Let me tell you why. And really why I look at this man as a mentor, as somebody not who just teaches. By the way, he happens to be a professor. He taught at Columbia, or he went to Columbia, but I got to know him at USC. Not as when I was a student there. He came much later, but he taught political science at USC. And actually, in that political science, he actually taught about all kinds of things. Actually, he did research on national security issues, international mediation, Middle East and Islamic studies, political rights, comparative genocides, and terrorism. My son's had a chance to sit through his genocide class, his terrorism class, which used to be like a lecture hall packed. It was one of the most popular classes on campus at the time. And he just taught it like with this knowledge, like firsthand knowledge, having lived in the Middle East, having studied the Middle East. But here's the beautiful part about Harair Dekmejian. He has the faith that Jesus Christ talks about, the faith of a child, the faith of understanding, not with your mind, but understanding with your heart. And you feel that when he sings the Sharagans. You felt it when he was leading my choir. But even today in the hospital bed, when we pray together, you feel that. And it went over to the way he lived, the way he conducted his life back in those days when he was teaching. Because here's the interesting thing. Here is a man who is respected on the academic level, so much so that these large news agencies would come to him whenever anything was brewing in the Middle East. And let me, you all know CNN, right? I'm going to tell you a funny story. This is a really, really wild story. So whenever something would brew in the Middle East, CNN would call him to give his commentary. And there were several times that we'd see him. You know, we'd get excited because, you know, he'd be sitting home and you'd say, hey, there's Professor Dick Mengen. There's our deacon. He's on TV and he's talking about the Middle East. And, you know, there was nobody who gave the analysis that he gave because he understood. He lived it. He understood it. But there was something that he put way above it, and that was his devotion to the church. So, in this particular case, it happened to be during the Lenten season. And during Lenten season, on Wednesdays, Fridays, we would have evening services. So something was brewing in the Middle East, and CNN wanted to interview him. And he said, well, I'm sorry, I go to church on that evening. If you would like me to comment, you need to bring the cameras to the church, because that's where I'm going to be. And so there we were. We did an evening service during Lent, and we walked out of the church building, the church proper, and there were these like giant floodlights and big vans there saying CNN, and yeah, he got them to come out to the church to interview him. Pretty cool, huh? I mean, you know, what is that saying? If the Muhammad doesn't come to a mountain, you bring the mountain to Muhammad, or something like that, whatever it is. He got CNN to bring the whole unit over there. And that's the kind of man he is. He's the man who, since I've known him, has never, never, ever missed church. Never, ever. Except for one time. And when I speak to his wife, Anush, delightful lady, who, by the way, happens to be the first woman parish council in the entire North American church. Yeah. One of the pioneers. She's just a pillar of strength and faith. And when I talk to her, she says, he's never missed church. He's been the inspiration for bishops. He's been the inspiration for priests. He's taken young men and taught them everything. Not only the rituals, the sharagans, the prayers, but also taught them language. So much so that we even have bishop. We even have priests that are serving in the church thanks to Harar Dek Medjan, this deacon. He never missed church, except for that one time. Yeah, I do have to tell you that one, too. That's another story. You might have heard it, but I just love telling this story. Yeah, he was there every Sunday. Every Sunday, without exception. I'd take vacation, he wouldn't. And one Sunday, he was missing. And I said, oh, I called him up the next day. Harar Sargavak, what happened? He says, I apologize. The king of Bahrain had come and he had been invited to a breakfast with the king. So with that, I guess we made that one exception. Not that the king was that exceptional. It was just a unique set of circumstances where the king wouldn't be in town and he in his capacity needed to be there. But Harar is a man of faith. He's inspired me. He's given me many, many opportunities, many, several opportunities to come into the academic world as well. When we first met in 1996, when I came to Pasadena, he invited me to be the chaplain for the students, Armenian students, at the University of Southern California, a position that I held at least for 10 years. And this involved meeting with students, organizing Bible studies on campus in a secular university, organizing Bible studies and being part of the team. And it was an opportunity also that he'd give me to speak to his class, to teach. And one of my most famous series of lectures, which we always get people asking about, it was called the Three O's, I think. Obama, Oprah, and Oz. You can find it. It's online someplace. It exists. It's a lecture series that I gave. And it was basically this, that you had a president named President Obama. You had a woman who had her regular talk show, the Oprah Winfrey Show, and obviously Obama, the power that he had as the most powerful and influential man in the world, President of the United States of America, you had Oprah, her influence that she had, the idea that she can basically take any book, doesn't even have to be a literary marvel, doesn't have to stand out, but she could endorse it, and the next day it gets shot up to the top position on the New York Times bestseller list. Do you remember that? You might not have, but it was phenomenal. She would do this regularly on her show. She would talk about a book, and the next day, that book would be sold out. You couldn't find it because everybody got it. That's power. That's power, right? And I talked about, for Armenians, Oz. Say, who is Oz? Actually, Özgulu. He happens to be a very famous doctor that's on TV, Dr. Oz, who happens to have Turkish origins. And what I did is I tied it all together that are we really certain what we're doing is correct? And this goes back to the In His Shoes model. That, you know, when I talk about In His Shoes, walking in the shoes of others, it's very important for us to understand that that model gives us credibility on the world stage. Instead of just talking about who we are as Armenian and talking about our past, we need to produce fruits for today. Say who we are today. Because all it takes is one Oz who has Turkish origins, ethnically Turkish, for someone like that to get up and one day deny the genocide. Now, who's going to stand up against him? You can't take, 2 million Armenians to stand up against this huge populace of people that are telling you, oh, the genocide doesn't exist. And it's something that you need to plan and have a strategy well in advance. And Dr. Dekmejian was somebody that I spent hours just bouncing ideas with. We used to have a favorite spot for lunch, too, called Marie Callender's, where we'd talk about many of these ideas as well, and also the opportunity that he gave me inside of his classroom. But more importantly, he gave, and he still does, give me inspiration to believe in the power of the church, that even in the hospital room when we pray together to see his movements, to see the power of prayer in his life, and as well as for his entire family. So we continue to pray. We are in prayer. We wish him only the best. And this Sunday, we will be consecrating a very special chachkar with the holy Miron. And that Miron has the power to give life to even inanimate objects such as stones. They become living testimonies to faith, living testimonies. That's a whole different power that we talk about. I've shared that with you many, many times. And I'm looking forward to this Sunday to seeing that again, once again, in front of our eyes, to be a witness to the power of that holy Miron. Let's take a break right now, okay? We do every week with a song of the day. I'm going to share with you a little Christmas tune, and we'll be back right after that. Continuing on the theme, I'll Be Home for Christmas. Aradabanjan and the Element Band. That is off of the Spirit of Christmas album. Came out, let's see, about 10 years ago. 10 years ago to the date. I'm going to have a link on today's show notes. Do check out not only this album, but all the wonderful music put out by the Element Band. They just had a concert, yeah, a couple months ago here in Los Angeles at the Ford Theater. Big success. Sell out. Anytime I listen to their music, anytime I get the chance to see them in person too, it's a, you realize what music can do for you. It's not only to relax, it's not only to enjoy, but it's really music to live by. Aradabanjan and the Element Band, I'll Be Home for Christmas, off of the Spirit of Christmas album. Check it out on our show notes today. You know what's really funny to me is like to see our churches honor people that have absolutely nothing to do with faith. Isn't that remarkable? It's just enough that they're Armenian, I guess. I just got an email while we were listening to the song of the day. I was quickly checking up. I know I cheated. I was listening in the background instead of just enjoying and absorbing, but I kind of knew what the song was going to be. Anyway, I was got an email about one of our churches that is that's going to have a lecture by somebody who has absolutely nothing to do with faith. And which is fine, do it, but the church shouldn't sponsor it, right? Right? Doesn't the church have a mission statement and it has something to do? It's like yesterday we were having a meeting. We were talking about Reclaim 2022. And it takes place in the middle of Lent. And one of the committee members says, well, are we gonna have a Lenten meal? That people are going to be against that. I go, what? Wait. What? People are going to be against that? Well, not everybody holds Lent. I said, yeah, that's fine. I understand that. Not everybody observes Lent. Not everybody is on a meatless diet. Not everybody does a vegan diet during Lent. I understand that. But you are the church. If you're not gonna hold that tradition, who else is gonna do it? And I can't imagine going to a Jewish event and them saying that, well, it doesn't matter if it's kosher or not. Of course it's kosher. Doesn't matter if you need kosher food or anything. That's what is being served that day. You are their guest. At least have a little bit of pride that this is what I believe. This is what I subscribe to. And you are coming into my house. This is the rules by which we are going to live because you're coming into my house and we happen to be serving Lenten food. And in the same way, this is our church, this is what our faith is. And if you're going to be speaking at our church and using our church as a platform, we ask not that you stand there and talk about your faith issues necessarily, but that you should be in sync with something, that something should sync up. Since the next couple stories that I'm going to share with you today, we're talking about I'll be home for Christmas and maybe I won't be there. What if you're not there because of the horrible situation? I know one of the people that won't be home for Christmas this year is my aunt. My maternal aunt won't be there, and that's the first Christmas without her. And that becomes very personal for me. But I want to share with you some that won't be there that kind of go beyond the personal experience. Two of them were KDJ and Gabriel Starring. And last Saturday, I had the distinct honor of officiating at their Celebration of Life service or get-together, gathering, let's call it gathering. It was streamed throughout the world because obviously these are international people, characters who were known throughout the world for their humanity. Actually, Gabriel's motto was humanity before politics. And he was somebody who survived incredible odds. Him and his wife, Katie J, together, they dodged bullets in Darfur. They survived attacks on their immune system in refugee camps with all the diseases that are there. But somehow they succumbed to the horrible traffic that exists here in the United States. They passed away in a horrific accident. But it did bring all of us together and a community of people that they had touched. And here is the example of it on many levels of what Jesus talks about. Jesus talks about give to people who have absolutely no way of returning that favor back to you. Gabriel and Katie J did exactly that. They gave to others. People who had no way of giving back to them. But they got much more in return, didn't they? Because they lived with that satisfaction. They knew that their life had meaning and purpose. I spoke quite a bit about them. That's why I'm not going to go into the details, although it's important. But for a question of time, we won't go into the details. I am going to put a link on the show notes to the show that I did. I think it was 2 weeks ago, right after their passing, three weeks ago. And of course, we're going to have more chance to really celebrate their life in the coming weeks when we commemorate their 40th day of passing, as is tradition in the Armenian Church, on January 7th. That's coming up. Yes, 2022, next year. Check out, you know, if you didn't hear that that particular episode, I give a lot of the background of who they were. They went into some of the worst places, the God-forsaken areas of the world, and helped people. Another one of those Jesus quotes that you could ascribe to them when Jesus says, I was hungry and you fed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was in prison and you visited me. People will say, when did we see you naked? When did we see you hungry? Yeah, you know, if Jesus came to my door and said, I'm hungry, of course I'm going to feed him. If Jesus came to my door and said, you know, I need some clothes, can you help me out? Of course, yeah, of course I'm going to do that. But when did we see you like that, Jesus? That's what people ask. And Jesus said, when you did it to the least of my brothers, you've done it to me. There it is. Least of my brothers. People out there. People out there who need help. And that's what they did to the least of their brothers and sisters throughout the world. Gabriel and Katie J. Living monuments of faith. Not necessarily talking, but living a faith. Living with their actions. And tragically, they won't be home for Christmas. Or can we say they might be? I think they will be. I think this is where you see the power of memory, the power of goodness that overcomes the evil. People who remember them, people who carry on their mission. And it becomes a way of living, it becomes a way of continuing their story. Now, I had the honor of officiating. People would say, oh, you're a priest. And it wasn't because I was a priest. It was because I was his friend. I knew Gabriel since 2005. We both served in dealing with issues of genocide. I was a survivor, grandchild of survivors of the Armenian genocide, coming into the 21st century and seeing that there was a genocide taking place in Darfur and saying, wait a minute, we are the people who are the children of the first genocide of the 20th century, 1915. How come we're not talking about the first genocide of the 21st century? And that's when I met Gabriel. We were doing some work together. And we struck up a friendship that continued. continued until this year when he was going to Armenia. And he served there in Armenia, teaching. Him and his wife, KDJ, she taught soccer. Can you believe it? A woman teaching soccer to Armenian men. Nobody could believe it, but it happened. It happened because the power that you have inside of you when you're doing the right thing, when you're doing the good work. And there was a really good interview where I asked her that question. How did the Armenian men take it? I'll put a link on the show notes to that interview as well. That one is actually a vodcast. You'll get to see the people talking too. But the amazing, amazing people. Yeah, they won't be home for Christmas. But I think we can count on it. We can plan on it. You see how the lyrics just work for us? We can plan on it by making them alive in our lives. So we had this wonderful celebration of life. There were people from their past, people from actually Gabriel, who was born in Mexico, a childhood friend who spoke, and people all around him just sharing the love and the energy that these two people gave. 2021 Christmas. I don't know. Can't say it. I can't say it. They won't be home for Christmas. I think they will be. The other one is Armin Agurjan. Yesterday was her funeral. This was a very sudden death. I'm not even sure of the circumstances, but it doesn't matter, does it? Right? We talk about accidents. We talk about death. Doesn't really matter. Last Sunday night, we had the children's memorial service. And you all of a sudden realize that it's one child after another. In fact, somebody came up. I was talking with Maria that night. Somebody came up and said, what about my child? It wasn't a child. It was somebody, you know, quite older. But everybody is somebody's child, right? Everybody is somebody's child. And I think this is where we start seeing that death is the great equalizer. We're all equal because we all end up in the same place. It's what do you do with that life that you do have? Because at the end is guaranteed. You're here not because of your choice. You get to do stuff in your life because of what you like to do. But at the end, it's a guarantee. It's over. At some point, it's over. The plug gets pulled. So what did you do with that life? What did you do? And it doesn't really, at that point, it doesn't really matter how it ended, does it? Whether it was COVID-19, an accident, or anything else. What did you do with life? And the people that I'm sharing with you today are people that have impacted life, changed life, that have taken life and exploited it. For the benefit of others, for beauty, for love. Armin Agurjan was a counselor at Glendale College. She had her own, she was a psychologist. She was a friend. We did a couple of seminars together. I would say maybe it would have to be almost 10 years ago, maybe seven, eight years ago. In Glendale, about topics that pertain to the Armenian community. That's where her focus was. She was in the Armenian community. She believed in the Armenian community, and she believed in helping the Armenian community, especially in trying to help it escape or pass on from its ghetto mentality. Now, what do I mean by ghetto? Don't get all bent out of shape. I know it takes on a negative connotation because it usually refers to slums and area, but also refers to a part of the city that is occupied by a minority group. Now, when you go into Glendale, for instance, there's such a large concentration of Armenians there outside of Armenia that it's one of the largest ones. I think Moscow probably surpasses it, but the entire Southern California area has a lot of Armenian, ethnic Armenians Glendale happens to be the hub of that entire Southern California area. And there are pockets of Glendale where you don't even need English. You don't even need to English to survive. You could survive with the language. And she was one who was bright enough to see that we cannot exist like this. You cannot survive forever like this. You need to push yourselves beyond that ghetto mentality. And we did a couple seminars together about the amot factor, amot being shame, that how people were shamed into a lot of the decisions that they made, particularly in dealing with family issues. There is, I was very moved by an Armenian author named Hovhannes Tumanyan, who wrote about that shame factor back in the turn of the 20th century, 19th to 20th century. He spoke about it in many of his poems, in many of his writings. In particular, probably the most famous of those is the Anush poem, which turned into an opera later on, and it's about the shame factor, how shame has really ruined people to not be able to think rationally, but rather by these ancient superstitions. And we were able to discuss that. She brought that to forum in everything that she did. She was truly a woman who was ahead of the game, who really wanted to improve the surroundings in which she lived, wanted to improve it not for herself, but for everybody to partake. And that's the kind of devotion, that's the kind of commitment, that's the kind of love that doesn't die. Now, look, the theme that we have today, I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on that. Think about that. There are people who won't be home for Christmas this year. But what can we plan? You can plan on what is being given to you at Christmas. At Christmas, you have an opportunity to start brand new life. El Niño, you have the baby coming. You have that little baby being born. And that baby in the manger, that Christ child, is all things new. Behold, I make all things new. There's nothing newer than a newborn baby. It's new life. And so I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on that. Why don't we plan on it? Why don't we bring people home for Christmas? There's so many opportunities. Christmas is in our hearts. Christmas is in our families. And really, we have a chance to talk about these people, to share the lives of these people. I mean, what is Christmas right now? You know that this week, we do the annual Christmas toy drive. We have a toy drive that I've never had before. It's over the top when you look at all the toys that we have collected. Why is that? Because people know that it can't be, especially COVID. What did it teach us? It taught us that we're not just these entities going through these mundane rituals, but that these rituals have to have meaning. And yes, if I'm going to give somebody a ritual of collecting toys, it gives them meaning. I just spoke to a young man who told me the other day, he was more excited about giving these toys. And all of a sudden, what rang in my head? What Jesus says, it is more blessed to give than it is to receive. Jesus could say that, we could teach that, but until that person, that young man, took his money that he was going to spend on himself and spent it on somebody else, he didn't understand it, but we gave the opportunity for them to do it. And these people that I shared with you today were giving that opportunity to others to rise from their occasion, rise from their conditions, whether in a refugee camp, whether in a classroom setting, or whether just on the streets. Each of them are people that are home for Christmas. Each of them are people that make it home for Christmas. And we can plan on that. Think about it for a moment. I know you've had losses in your family. I know that there are special people that won't be around that Christmas table this year. I know that there are going to be people that are away, perhaps in a hospital, perhaps away because of the conditions of politics, because of wars. Bring them home for Christmas. Bring them home for Christmas with the beautiful memories, with the beautiful thoughts that they added to your life. And find that moment to reflect, to talk, to be inspired by people who have come before you. They're all around you. They're all around you.
Christmas Eve will find me where the love light gleams. I'll be home for Christmas. If
before getting back to the next step with Father Vazgen, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. The next step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the next step with Father Vazgen.
We have an incredible weekend in front of us, and we're getting ready for it. We have a deacon's conference, a deacon's workshop. My dear friend, Father Mardudos Chevian, the dean of St. Nerses Armenian Seminary, will be out here leading that conference and workshop. We have the deacon's celebration on Sunday, and as I mentioned a few minutes ago, there's going to be a dedication to a chachkar, a cross stone, at the cathedral by His Eminence Archbishop Hovnan Derdeyan, to recognize the unwavering commitment of Deacon Hrad Dekmedjan to the Holy Armenian Church. And all of this is going to be streamed. Please make sure you watch it. It's going to be very inspirational, and I know that we run into that horrible problem of time, right? Because not everybody's... It's going to be 10 o'clock, 10:30 Sunday morning Pacific time, and I know not everybody is awake in the world at that time, but fortunately it will be recorded and you can watch it. I would especially ask you to listen to the words that are spoken by His Eminence during that consecration ceremony. Let's see, this weekend we also bring an end to our toy drive. You still have a few moments out there. If you get this message early enough before Monday our time, you can still donate. You can go to our website, inhisshoes.org. You can donate there. You can order toys, whatever works for you. Please make a point of participating in these wonderful opportunities that we have to walk in the shoes of others. Sunday evening, there's going to be a Christmas concert that I'm going to be emceeing at the cathedral. And that one, I'm not sure if that's going to be streamed, but if it is, please join along. A lot of stuff going on. Next week, we're going to be talking about Christmas traditions. Traditions that, well, yeah, kind of get forgotten. But not by us. We will remember those traditions. And as always, you can count that it's not going to be the usual fare, okay? Listen, whether you're home for Christmas, you're not home for Christmas, I hope this next couple of weeks are blessed for you as we get ready for the new year. I want to invite you to check out the show notes to read more about the things we talked about today. Also visit our website, inhisshoes.org. We are on all the socials, and I look forward to seeing you here or there, but definitely next week. On behalf of our producer, Susie, and myself, Father Voskin, I look forward to taking the next step with you again.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
I forgot to ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are.